As the news of coronavirus reverberates throughout the world, we at HRN are especially concerned about how coronavirus will impact our food system. We will use our platform to support the restaurant, agriculture, hospitality, and other food-related industries by maintaining our coverage and operations. As social distancing becomes the temporary norm, podcasts are more important than ever. There's never been a more crucial time to stay informed about the state of our food system and the ways that food connects our global community. We're sharing all of our COVID-19 coverage at heritageradionetwork.org/COVID-19, from interviews with nonprofit leaders and journalists, to firsthand accounts from chefs and restaurant owners, to reports on how this crisis is affecting regional farms. Our team is working remotely from all over to keep Food Radio alive. HRN needs your support more than ever to keep sharing essential stories and resources with our listeners. Make a donation of any amount. Visit heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
This episode is brought to you by Bend the Table, a monthly food subscription service for avid home cooks focused on delicious and sustainable pantry items. Learn more at bendthetable.com. That's BENTOTABLE.com. And when you use code HRN for a new subscription, you get $20 off, and we at HRN get $10.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. This is a special recording in June 2020, and unfortunately due to the pandemic, our studio's been closed, but we're recording remotely. The upside is that we've gotten to talk to people from all over the world, Norway, London, Seattle, and today we'll be talking to folks in Belgium, Barcelona, and Franconia, Germany. So we're going to go around the room and introduce everyone. First, a big shout out, heritageradionetwork.org. Support us. There's a summer membership drive, heritageradionetwork.org/donate. So let's go around the room. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host here on Beer Sessions Radio.
And I'm Jim Barnes Bakke, and I'm working at Hertel Brau Manufaktur in Schlüsselfeld in Germany, in Franconia.
And Franconia, and Bakke, I knew you for a long time in New York City. You worked at Pretty Things Beer. You worked at Shelton Brothers as well. So we're going to talk a little about how you ended up in Franconia, because all of our guests today would have been on the Shelton Brothers tours that were postponed due to the pandemic. Joel, I didn't hear you. Can you introduce yourself again?
Yeah, it's Joel from Shelton Brothers.
Great. And you also have been organizing these Shelton Brothers tours the last few years, haven't you?
Yeah, for a couple of 2 or 3 years, we've been going to as you mentioned, Belgium, Franconia, and Barcelona. So when you said you wanted to have a show about the tours, I said, let's get some of my American buddies who are in all three of these places and they can talk about how much they miss me.
Well, it really makes sense. And it's great to be here in New York and get the chance to talk to people in those three countries. So Casey in Belgium, we talked to you last fall. You were in New York for the Shelton Brothers Festival, but you're at Brouwerij Duranka.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Jimmy and listeners. I'm Casey Wellman. I work at Brouwerij Duranka in Dottigny, Belgium, just on the language border over here.
It's great. And when did you first go to Belgium and end up working at a Belgian brewery?
I just came over here in 2012 as a communications student. It was a study abroad. I was choosing between Nepal, Mongolia, and Brussels. I compromised and picked Belgium for the beer, which I guess 8 years later wasn't much of a compromise because I'm pretty happy where I am.
Oh, that's great. And the other, so we've got our other American expat is Elliot. Elliot, introduce yourself in Barcelona.
Hey, everyone. I'm Elliot Koenig. I'm here at Edge Brewing in Barcelona, Spain.
That's great. So first, I want to Elliot, you're newer to me. Just tell us about Edge Brewing, how it got set up. It's Americans. There's American equipment. Tell us why that happened and how you got involved. A little backstory on Edge.
Sure. So Edge Brewing was the brainchild of Scott Vanover and Alan Shepard, two Americans who were involved in the beer community in the U.S. Alan works for Premier Stainless. He had worked for them before and is actually back with them now. Scott was a home brewer and just a beer aficionado in Tampa. You know, a lot of friends, a lot of people in the neighborhood, in the industry that they were, you know, close with. And they just, Scott pretty much went traveling around Europe and saw the beginning of a craft beer movement here. And so in 2013, he started doing all the necessary work to open Edge Brewing with the idea of bringing American craft beer to Barcelona, Spain. The first beer was brewed in January of 2014, and we've been going strong ever since. I joined Edge pretty much the end of 2017, came in as in the role of general manager, and have been here ever since running the show.
So where did you work before?
I used to work in finance, actually, for 10 years. I worked in the hedge fund industry for different fund administrators. So I was actually all over the place. I lived in Dublin, Curacao, Toronto, and Boston. And I'd studied abroad in Spain many years ago, and I had the opportunity to just make the move. So I moved to Spain in 2014. I was working from home. And after about 2 years, I realized I needed to make a change and saw pretty much what Scott had seen, that the craft beer movement was really starting to take form here, and decided to quit my job and find a way into the craft beer industry in Spain.
You know, just to jump ahead to now, you know, the pandemic, I know it hit Spain, shut a lot of it down, just like New York. What was that experience like, and how are you guys going to come back from that?
Yeah, it was quite a situation, especially for me, because I was home right before this all broke out. I'm from Miami originally, so I was actually home mid-February for Wakefest, and then spent some time visiting and flew back on the Monday before pretty much the quarantine started here. So we were supposed to have a major festival here, which was the Barcelona Beer Festival, and that all got canceled pretty much 2 to 3 days before. I mean, it's been quite a ride. I mean, imagine for everyone, we all had to just figure out how to survive. Here in Spain, the government obviously mandated the closures of bars, restaurants, and hotels, which are our key customers. But breweries of all sizes and shapes were considered essential business. So we had to remain open and find a way to survive. And that led to opening of online stores and just working with whatever channels we can to move product.
That's great. Let's go back to Joel. So Joel, you know, you're the brainchild behind the Shelton Tours. How did you move into Barcelona? I know you've been telling me about it. I should have been in one of your tours already this year. Why Barcelona?
I get the inspiration from my brother Dan, which is not the first time that's happened, of course. He was traveling in Spain many years ago, kind of checking out the first beer festival, the craft festival, Mediona Festival, which is out in the countryside west of Barcelona. He was going there in the early days, one of the few foreigners that actually was showing up at this thing, and just became a fan of the brewers there. They were all starting off basically fresh, learning to brew. And he just kept returning to this fest because it was so down home and fun. And just became friends with a lot of these guys. When they finally started making beer that tasted good, he started trying to import it. So we became kind of the only real importers of Spanish craft in the U.S. And he did that behind my back, so I didn't know much about it. When I joined Shelton Brothers, which was 10 years ago, I ended up going with him on one of these trips to the Mediona Fest, and I caught the bug equally badly. And pretty quickly, I became in charge of, ordering and buying from Spain. And so I became like the Spanish guy at Shelton Brothers, which was a really nice job. And so, just made sure we returned there every year at least once or twice. And so got to be friends with all these guys. And Elliot's a good pal at Edge, among a lot of other folks. And so it's just a really good scene there. Really good beer and a beautiful place, obviously. So you can't say much bad about it at all. And we have our own festival there partnered with Elliot and the guys at Garage called MASH, which is also looks like it's being canceled this year. But it gives me an excuse to go there once a year. We hope to still have the tour in October in Spain, but that's definitely to be decided. But it's a really cool scene that I've been trying to promote here in the U.S. And I think it's finally starting to catch on a little bit based on the interest people have shown to go on our tour in October.
That's great. And Elliot, Give us a few highlights of that tour. When I come to Barcelona, whether this fall or next year on the Shelton tour, what are some places that I'm going to go to?
Yeah, so, I mean, Joel obviously knows the city really well and some of the hot spots, but, I mean, definitely the highlights are going to Vaso de Oro, which is owned by Gabriel Fort. It's one of the original tapas bars in the city. He makes all of his own beer, and he has some of the best tapas in the city, including a solomillo with foie dish that is spectacular. You also get to go to just some of the local bars in the city. Beer Cab, which is recognized as the top beer bar in the country of Spain or Catalonia. The Garage Bar as well, coming to our brewery. And then trips outside of the city to visit Carlos and Monse, who have Ales Aguillons. They're the organizers of the Mediona Fest that Joel was speaking about before. They have a farmhouse out in the countryside, and just going to their house and seeing how they produce beer and just being in their surroundings is, it's an amazing, magical experience.
Well, that's a great little intro. Let's go to Casey's. Casey in Belgium, just tell us a little more about Duranke. I mean, I love the beers, Duranke XX, Duranke Guldenberg. What are some things that you've been going through now during the pandemic? Any changes in your business operations?
Sure, I'd be happy to explain. For those who don't know the brewery, which I'm finding more and more to my disappointment, a lot of people into craft beer don't necessarily know Duranke over here in Belgium. We're a Belgian brewery started about 25 years ago by two just beer lovers in Belgium who love classic Belgian beers. They missed the hops in Belgian beers. Not to say they wanted to overload people with bitterness or anything, but they wanted to bring bitterness back, and they wanted to bring floral aromas from hops back into Belgian beers. And it's been a small project, then a small brewery, to a medium-sized brewery ever since. We only work with whole hop flowers, which I can explain a bit of hop bitten, how that impacts our business right now. The hops are bought once per year, flowers dried directly from the farmers. Almost always Belgian hops as well, to help support that industry. So we don't really see changes in our supply chain or anything. We have hops in the fridge all year. That's fine. But as soon as the crisis set in, maybe I'll explain my job as well a bit first. So at Duranke, I work in the tap room with a colleague. I also work in production about half time. And what we saw, the tap room closed down immediately just around St. Patrick's Day, the Saturday before that, I believe here in Belgium. So that'd be the 14th of March. All the bars, restaurants shut down in Belgium as of that Saturday. And so the brewery saw an immediate decline in sales to about 10% of what it was before. And that lasted until about a week ago. So what that meant for the brewery is there were still a few brews planned. Also a few beers that the owners, Nino and Guido, wanted to test, mostly sour beers, different projects. So any brews following that were mostly just project beers, sour beers, and then slowly bottling whatever was in tanks. And for the last 2 or 3 weeks, we haven't brewed anything, actually, at the brewery. We'll finally start again tomorrow. Overall, things went really quiet. And now that it's starting up again, we see a lot of positive response. We're just on the French border, so we see a lot of sales in Belgium and a lot of sales in France. And we see that engagement from people, which is really great. As far as the brewery goes, the way we reacted to things, basically the brewery is just looking to keep everybody on, take care of its staff, and keep doing what it could to make sure we can continue afterwards. I started doing bicycle beer delivery in the village and the surrounding villages, actually, which has been a fun project. And we're slowly now over here getting a little bit back to the usual, which is at least in the French-speaking part of Belgium, but definitely in all of Belgium as well, drinking beer on terraces whenever it's sunny. And you definitely see that energy coming back again.
Well, that's great. We'll talk more about your beers because I just love the Duranky XX and the bitter hops and everything. And Joel, what are some of the features of the Belgium tour for Shelton Brothers? That's another tour I want to go on.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Durank is definitely a feature. It's one of the most beautiful breweries to visit. I mean, it's a great view from the terrace to drink beer. I mean, you can't beat that to start off. But of course, you know, the obvious things like Cantillon and Driefontaine are highlights. Pretty much everything we go on in that tour for me is equally great highlight. Straza, Thierrier in France. We get to go to West of Lettering. We might even, next time we go, we may even get a tour inside, which is, I think, no one ever gets, but we'll see what happens with that. It's just one stop, one thing after another. Oberon in France, De La Seine in Brussels. It's just pretty much one great thing after another. So I can't even pick one thing out. We had some new things added on, which I'm very disappointed to have missed. Pooker, I'm trying to remember the name. Pooker, it's a hop farm we were going to go visit.
Pooker, the Pooker.
Yeah. And that was a hop farm that makes their own beer, and I just sort of found it online, which I had never been there. We were going to visit those guys. And we were also going to the Kazematen, this brewery built into the castle, to the city walls in Ypres, was going to be our opening dinner and stuff, all kinds of things. So, you know, that's all come and gone in May. We never got to go. Fortunately, the huge majority of our guests were so psyched to go on the trip that they just decided, all right, we'll sign on for next year. And they all paid and everything, and they just said, all right, never mind, we'll just go next year. So they were very, very cool about that for the most part. So we're just going to plan to just recreate it next May, assuming everything goes okay. I have to admit, I'm a little concerned about our U.S. response to COVID and whether anyone wants us to ever visit again. But we will see. But hopefully May 2021 will come sooner than later.
Thanks, Joel. You know, we just don't know, but I also feel like we're all positive people, so we know that we're going to have some resemblance to normalcy in some way. Let's go over to Franconia. So, Baki, Jim.
Hello. Yes.
Just tell us your journey. How did you end up in Franconia? A little backstory and just part, you know, parts of the daily life that you're loving and the beer culture there. Because for diehard beer fans, before there was American craft beer, Franconia was the promised land.
Yeah, it was. Bamberg was a word I always heard from the older beer geeks back in the early 2000s when I first started getting into beer. And I thought, what the hell is this Bamberg? But I think it didn't really sink in until I first saw a Shelton Brothers video wherein it was the dear departed Ray Dieter with Daniel Shelton. It was a video of them touring Franconia. And I thought, wow, that's cool. And every year, Joel, every time we would do a beer event around the city in New York City, I worked with Shelton Brothers, by the way. I should put that in there. And wonderful experience, too. He always talked about Bromberg and Franconia. And one event we were doing at one of Patrick's bars, Patrick Doniger. I finally asked him, I said, well, look, can I come on one of these trips to Franconia? He says, I don't see why not. It'd be great for you to come along.
Joel, why don't you jump in a little more about Franconia?
Well, I think, yeah, Bucky was referring to the infamous video of Ray Dieter and my brother tootling around in their bikes. If you, Ray, as we all know, is not with us anymore, sadly, but was a great guy and was a huge, huge fan of Franconia, and he and Dan were quite a spectacle on their bikes going around the countryside, discovering this amazing stuff that the locals always knew about and no one else seemed to know about because it's really in the middle of nowhere. And so once again, as I mentioned, Dan sort of, for me anyway, discovered Catalunya as far as beer. He also sort of turned me on to the Franconian. I had been there. I'd been to Bamberg in the 80s just trying Rauch beer because I was a pre-Shelton Brothers beer geek, of course. But I hadn't really explored the area. And so once I got in with Shelton Brothers, then I became the German guy as well. And we made a big tour every summer to go to some festivals and to just hang out in Bamberg all the time. And eventually Bakke became one of our guys on tour. So we spent a lot of time together in Lederhosen, knocking back liters in between going to these beer gardens. And it's just a magical place. And I always say, if you haven't been there, you haven't really had beer yet. And I would stand by that. I think everybody in the beer world at least knows about it. And whoever hasn't been there is planning to go. And it's just one of those places. And there's nothing like it in the world. And I'm very sad to be missing it in the next few weeks when we should be there in late July. So that's the way it is now. But I look forward to going back as soon as possible, because there's really nothing in the world like it.
That's great. Hey, thanks so much for joining in. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back in a minute on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This episode is brought to you by Bend a Table, a monthly food subscription service for avid home cooks focused on delicious and sustainable pantry items. Bend a Table is founded by Ben Simon, a longtime food lover, advocate, and experimenter. Ben goes around the country finding the stuff that you would buy if you were vacationing somewhere cool, like Charleston or California, and he buys it for you and sends it to you in a box. Bend a Table has three different subscription plans. One, pantry essentials, incredible dry staples each month. Rancho Gordo beans, Geechee Boy grits, and community grain pastas. All excellent, by the way. Global Delicacies is another choice, and it's a way to explore the cuisine of different countries and cultures. Delicacy boxes might include razor clams from Spain, tinned obviously, huitlacoche from Mexico, or grilled artichokes in oil from Italy. Bend a Table includes both the Pantry Essential and the Global Delicacy Plan. By purchasing any subscription, you'll help sustainable, well-produced ingredients and small producers stay alive in today's big business environment. Start your monthly subscription at bendatable.com. That's BENTOTABLE.com. Use the discount code HRN to get $20 off a new subscription, and Bend a Table will donate $10 to support all of HRN's programming.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's June 2020, and we're talking with American expats in Europe, including Casey at Breweries Duranke in Belgium, and Elliot at Edge Brewing in Barcelona. So, Elliot, what is unique about things, the ingredients in particular, some things that I would say this is Barcelona, are using American ingredients, American water, you know, what is uniquely Barcelonian about craft beer? Is beer something that Spanish people or Catalanians have been drinking? Now give us a little interesting details.
Yeah, so, well, to start with the ingredients, obviously in the early days when Scott and Alan started the brewery, there was this concept for all American ingredients, American recipes, American machinery. Nowadays, the only thing that still remains is the American machinery. From Premier Stainless. But at this point, our brewer is British with Robin Barden, and our ingredients, we've realized that sourcing is much easier to do in Europe than bringing it over from the US, aside from the hops, obviously. So that's pretty much been just in terms of the ingredients. Spain is a very beer-loving country. They consume beer at all hours of the day. It's not surprising to go in for your coffee at 9 in the morning and see people just sitting at the bar already drinking, whether it be alcoholic beer or non-alcoholic beer. So there's always been a demand for beer here. So yeah, so there's always been a high demand for beer here. And, you know, historically, the industrial breweries of Spain have always, you know, been kings, whether it be Estrella Damm or Mao San Miguel. Those have always been the pioneering beers. Before Edge started, there was, you know, some breweries had already started to take shape, Aguillon's, Marina, and many others. So there was some movements of craft beer that had already started to formulate here. And over the last 4 or 5 years, it's definitely been an explosion with just so many great breweries popping up, not only here in Barcelona, but throughout the country. You know, Barcelona tends to be a little bit more progressive than the rest of the country. So it's definitely been a lot more prevalent here. But I mean, if you look around the country now, you have breweries like Baskeland up in San Sebastian, or Peninsula in Madrid, Napar Beer in Pamplona. I mean, there's just great beer now being produced throughout the peninsula.
Yeah, and Elliot, you guys have so much going on in Barcelona, and I'm definitely going to visit at some point. Why do you export? Is there a marketing reason for it? Why would you export if you have so many people coming to Barcelona to drink your beer?
So I guess kind of like what I was saying before, the whole movement towards craft beer is relatively young here. Spain historically has been a country of drinking bicolor, whether it be, and as they say in Spain, rubia, tostada, negra, or trigo, which is blonde, toasted, black, or wheat. And that's how most people used to order. So getting people to pay for a more expensive beer or just with flavors that they weren't really used to was a bit more difficult. And so I know when Edge Brewing started, exporting was actually probably 80-85% of our sales. And it was, you know, it's a great way to just get your brand out there. It gets you invited to festivals all over Europe and all over the world. So you get to travel a little bit more. And it was really, really the way to do it. But over the last few years, we've obviously seen the growth of craft beer throughout all of Europe as it is all over the world. And so export sales is actually not as strong as it had been before. And now there's definitely a focus towards the local market. But thankfully, with all these years of producing and trying to educate and teach the consumers here that there is more to a color in beer, it's actually gone well that we've been able to level out and sell more beer locally and within the country rather than exporting it.
So, Elliot, you're the GM. Tell me a little bit about the roles that you have. You're separate from the brewery. There's an ownership structure. You know, what are you responsible for?
It's a loaded question. So I originally got hired as a general manager. So that was to do the accounting and the administration and kind of general human resources, managing the brewery. And as Scott said, being the adult in the room. But that's obviously changed quite a bit over the years. I also do all the international sales, all the national sales. Right now, we have some of our staff on paid leave just for the COVID crisis. So I also do the local sales, and then I organize a big part of the organizing of the MASH Festival. So it's really ballooned into just more than general manager. But yeah, it's a lot of hats to wear here. We're a small team. We have 7 people, and you know, things need to get done. So kind of just do all that I can to help out.
So as the adult in the room, I love that expression. It seems like we all need an adult in our lives. What are some of the joys of living in Barcelona that you have to worry about as the adult in the room?
I mean, there's, you know, general things to deal with here in terms of the great things about Spain that you always hear about, siesta and a laid back lifestyle, coming from the US and trying to manage here. You know, you have to kind of look down at your phone and think, can I make this phone call? Oh no, it's between 2 to 4:30. People are at lunch. So it's a little bit difficult at times with that, or just the entire month of August where everyone's on vacation and you need to pre-plan all your purchasing and labels and everything you can imagine for the month prior, because you're not getting an answer the entire month of August. So, I mean, those are some of the quirks, but other than that, it's, you know, it's working. It's just, you know, getting out there, talking to the people and getting them to understand what the product is.
That's great. And I'd like to go back to Baki. Let's just go back. Tell us a little about your journey to Franconia. Fill us in.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I was working with Shelton Brothers and heard about Franconia from Joel. I'd seen this video with Daniel and the dear departed Ray Dieter exploring these Kellers. And I thought, what is what is this all about? I want to go to there, to quote Tina Fey. So I asked Joel about it. He said, man, come on out. Yeah. So I talked with Daniel and Tessa, and they said, yeah, come on out. You're more than welcome. And my heart was always here. So later on in my career, I thought, I want to travel. So I talked with Dan and Martha. They were doing a year of traveling with this work and travel. And you get to work on these different places. It could be a farm, it could be a brewery, winemaker, cider maker, whatever. And so, so I signed up on this website. I found Hertelbrau Manufacturer. And they're a small family-run brewery here in the middle of Franconia. And, I mean, really, really small, as in one room about the size of your office, Joel, that fits the brew house, the filling machine, and the bottle washing machine. So I was just washing about, like, 600 bottles today with, in this tiny machine that fits 16 bottles at a time. So, yeah. But, I started working with these guys, was it 2018? And had to be away for a few months because of the whole Schengen visa thing. But they found a way for me to stay on for 3 years and do an apprenticeship. So now I'm going to school. And at the same time, I'm learning German. I mean, literally, that's how it's been. So I sit in class at the school. I don't understand a word of what's being said, although it's getting better. And then I go back through with Google Translate, and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. Okay, pasto.
Don't poison anyone, Baki.
No. I'm learning proper. It's really cool. It's the experience of learning the beer culture here and the brewing culture, and learning the language at the same time. It's probably one of the most challenging parts of my life, but also really incredibly rewarding. It's just
Tell us about the town. So the Braumanufaktur Hertel.
It's
the town that it's in, and a little bit about that town, any other breweries nearby, any places to eat food, a little bit of the life of the town.
Cool. Perfect. Well, we're in this little town called, it's a town called Schlüsselfeld, and on the outskirts of Schlüsselfeld is the brewery in a little hamlet called Tungfeld. And the brewery started 12 years ago. The family started it, and nearby us is a another brewery that's a bit more traditional, slightly bigger. It's called Stambroi Schäuble. And I live right across the street from the brewery there. So it's a little market town. We've got a hotel, we've got a brewery, and a big old church with a steeple. Like, where I'm sitting, I'm looking over the town, in this beer garden. So it's a farmer town. They're farmers. There's Puma and Adidas that manufacture their shoes right nearby. So there's a lot of thirsty people, a lot that come by.
And what are some of the ingredients? So it's a farming area. I mean, hops, malt. Tell us some particulars. Is there a place that you guys buy from?
The main farming industry is wheat and barley. Obviously important for beer and for bread. For rapeseed oil. So in this, like, later in the spring, you've just got these brilliant fields of yellow, bright yellow, and they're these rapeseed flowers. So that's a big thing. And then we're surrounded by forests, so we've got wild blueberries and blackberries that grow all around. So Yeah, hopefully we'll have a good harvest of blueberries this year to brew like a blueberry ale with. So, yeah.
And what beers are you guys making regularly at?
Regularly at Heritage, we've got a group of the classic Franconian styles. We've got a Keller beer called Opa's Liebling, which is grandfather's favorite. A light lager beer, bright lager beer called Moody's Sun and Shine, Mother's Sunshine. And then we have a wheat beer, a Weitz beer called Papa's Weitzeit, so Papa's Wisdom. So we brew those throughout the year, and we partner with a bigger brewery because we're just too small to sort of feed the demand that, you know, that we get with these beers. So, you know, we sell throughout the local area through, you know, to supermarkets, to restaurants, hotels nearby. So,
Bucky, last thing. So, yeah, this will get edited too. Yeah. Bucky, last thing. So in that town... So Hertel is a new brewery. Is that common in Franconia that there's new breweries? Are there breweries that are open and closing, or there's just historical breweries? Tell me more.
Well, there's a lot of new craft breweries opening up, mostly toward the bigger cities like Nuremberg. And then obviously outside of Franconia in Bamberg, and then outside of Franconia in Berlin and Munich. But we're the one craft brewer here in this village. And so we're like, we just brewed an IPA, a hazy IPA, in conjunction with the All Together program that other half is doing. So, and we're getting ready to bottle that this week, actually. So it's so weird. I escaped America's crazy, hazy obsession only to arrive in Franconia. And they're like, let's brew a hazy IPA. So.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, right in Brooklyn right now, Threes is featuring a lightly smoked lager. And a lot of breweries have been making Schwarz beer this past winter.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know.
No, it's great. That's the beauty. When there isn't a hell of a lot being sold, there's more time to let these beers lager. So lager away. That's what I say.
That's great. Okay, yeah. Bucky, now we're going to go to Casey. So Casey, tell us a little more about the sourcing ingredients in your part of Belgium. Some of the local color and flavor, but you know, where do you get your hops? You can mention any farms or, you know, distributors.
Sure,
you work
absolutely.
With. So Joel mentioned a bit earlier. Joel mentioned visiting a hop farm over in West Flanders called De Plukker. That's quite a small farm. They sell a majority of the hops they grow, and they also brew on site with the minority of that, from what I understand. There are about 10 hop farms in Belgium. We source from two of them. We source from one in as two languages or two names, because there are two languages in Belgium, and it's also on the border. Warneton or Woosten, it's called Forest Farm. I would say just from looking at the hop fridge, we get at least 70% of our hops from there. And a minority of our hops from Poperinge, just near West Vlaanderen, at Boerhaven. That's our secondary supplier. We buy our malt from four different malt houses. Our pale malt all comes from Belgium, so is our base malt. Sometimes we dip into Germany for either wheat malt or specialty dark malts from Weyermann sometimes. But it all comes basically from this region. And the thing about Duranka is that we work with hop flowers. So what determines a lot of how we work during the year is the hop harvest, which is in about September here. We had a cool thing, which I would really love to share with visitors from anywhere, is visiting the hop fields. We took a bunch of Duranka fans out there last September, just before I was with you last time, Jimmy. We visit the hop fields just at harvest time. We watch the hop farmer. They know us well. I mean, Nino and Guido, the owners of Duranka, they've been clients of this hop farm for at least 20 years. I don't have a precise year, but it's been at least 20 from what I understand. They were showing us around. They showed us, they picked a couple of rows of hops for us. They were processing them, separating the flowers from the vines and showing us where they dry them, along with a group of whatever people wanted to join us on that bus that day. Went around kind of exploring the roots of Duranka that day. That was a lot of fun.
That's great. In case, when you say hop flowers, you mean the hop itself.
The cones, I guess, is what people say in the U.S. Yeah, so the hop is one of its closest relatives is, I guess, cannabis, marijuana. But it grows a bit differently. It grows several meters or yards up. It can go into a bush, but hop farmers train it to usually grow up some sort of metal wire just to get a good surface area to expose the sunlight to grow flowers. The hop grows a green flower, which is about the size of an acorn. At least the female plant does, which is what the hop farms are populated with. And that's the aromatic flower that might attract, for example, butterflies or other things. But to humans, it also smells very nice. It, depending on the variety, you can get very rose-like aromas, all the way to fruity, all the way to like resiny, like evergreen type scents. It's an amazing little flower. It doesn't have that many uses for humans, except to bitter and flavor our beers, as well as preserve them, or maybe to make a tea to help you go to sleep. But at Duranka, we love the hop. So we're very connected with that.
Casey, just about you.
Yes.
When you first got there, whatever, 8 years ago, what was it hard to adapt? And what languages do you speak? And, you know, what was it like working in another country?
So I came here 8 years ago as a student of communications, but my actual mission was just to visit breweries. So I was skipping class quite often to go out and visit different breweries across Belgium by bicycle, by train. I guess I had a lot more ambition than I had fear. I spoke a bit of French upon arrival. And as I studied it in the US, I didn't like it, to be honest. And that's not to criticize things as they are in the US, but I had different reasons for studying French than most French students did. I wanted to learn French to talk with people. And a lot of the topics we studied in class were just tourism based, to be honest. Visiting like monuments, sites, as a tourist, what you need. And I didn't like it very much. So my French actually got much better in Belgium when I found out I could use that to learn about beer. I was like, oh, wow, suddenly this language makes sense. Okay, I can talk with people. I can talk with this monk. I can find my way through things. And so my experience was very positive once I arrived. I had a very helpful professor who I'm still very good friends with. Named Michelangelo van Meerten. You have a lot of unique names here in Belgium. And during my semester of studies, he was also learning a lot about beer. And together, by the end of the semester, we agreed that we'd visit a lot of breweries. So when I stayed on past my study program, I became his intern, not for beer reasons, but to help with the program. And on the side, we'd often visit breweries on weekends by bicycle, by train, by car. And that's actually how I got to know Nino at Duranka, one of the two owners. As we basically wrote him an email, he said, sure, come by for a tasting. No problem. And we were both fans before that, but I've been a really hardcore Duranka fan ever since. And that was 2013.
And so in the beginning, what were you doing? You were cleaning kegs, you were...
I only started working at Duranka last spring, to be honest. I lived in Prague for 5 years previously. I was sometimes working at one of the lambic producers, out Bersel, just south of Brussels. From Prague, I would commute for the season of emptying, filling barrels, all of that. And I'd just known Nino and Guido for a few years by then. To start at Duranka, they hired me because in those recent years since 2012 and 13, I'd picked up on a bit of Dutch. My French had gotten better. And when I was traveling to Belgium, Duranka always remembered me because I was, I was living in Prague and I would tell my Czech friends who were either brewers or they owned bars or just beer fans. I would say, okay, anyone who wants to come along, I'll take a week off and we'll do a tour. In a similar spirit to what Shelton Brothers Tours is doing, just to really share a beer culture with people. And Nino and Guido, they always remembered me mostly from that, from an American guide bringing a bunch of Czechs into a Belgian brewery. It was a kind of a strange thing. But Duranka was always a sure stop on my tour. I love the place. I love the beers. That even spans from before I was working there. But from the beginning, I was hired to help man the tap room, to take some of the tours off of Nino's back because he gets a bit busy with other things. Also has family life. Now he's over 60 years old now, and he's still there usually 6 days a week at the brewery. And also to help in production on the side. So yeah, washing kegs is a part of my everyday thing. Sometimes I'm transferring bottles from cases to other cases. I'm still doing that. That doesn't change. Everyone in the brewery does it. Because we have consigned bottles, so there's a deposit on them. We don't have a washing machine yet, so we take our cases full. We send the bottles to other breweries to be washed and reused. Giving tours, serving beers, cleaning out the mash tun, taking the hops out of the kettle, because we only use hop flours. So somebody has to go down at 7 in the morning, take the still warm hops from yesterday's brew, fill hops or fill malt sacks with all these hops that are kind of semi-dry, and then scrub with a bristle pad or Brillo pad, sorry. The whole inside of the boiling kettle. It's really variable, my work.
Well, it's a great journey, man. It's that's what I want to see on the tour, Joel. I want to go.
You guys can come in the boiling kettle. You're absolutely welcome.
Yeah. Actually, it's one of my first, it was 2006 was when I first, at my pub in New York City, I met Dan Shelton, and I was first, one of the first things he placed on my draft system was the Duranky Guldenberg.
Oh, the Guldenberg.
Manny, I had a Belgian triple on, which was, and that was one way Dan got in with us. He's like, well, that's crap, but we have, he called it a naturally made Belgian triple, Duranky Guldenberg.
That's a nice way to explain it.
I must have personally drinking about 100 sixthels over a couple of years.
Yeah, the Guldenberg is, it's a wonderful beer. That's what the brewery started with, actually. That was Nino's homebrew in the early 90s, which in Belgium, nobody was starting a brewery in the early 90s. You maybe have Dodola Brouwers popping up from at some point. But there was a lot of radio silence because so many breweries had closed in the 1980s. But yeah, it was with a triple, but it's not a bitter beer, but there's bitterness in a triple. I love Guldenberg. I avoid it actually because it's so drinkable at the high alcohol, as with a lot of triples, that it doesn't help my next day very much.
I think, you know, there's the cocktail craze. Screw the cocktail craze. I'm a fan of a really good Belgian triple on a Friday night. That's my drink. So
that's a good way to go. And by the way, that still remains one of our only two dry hopped beers at the brewery. Our more hoppy aromatic beers are not dry hopped, but our triple is, which is kind of funny.
Wow. I'm definitely want to come there. Let's just get everyone at Elliot. If you want to just tell us about one beer that you have and that we could be drinking this summer.
Yeah. So, actually I'm enjoying one right now, which is our, Pina Colada Sour, our Berliner Weiss. Today is actually the start of a holiday here. It's San Juan. So typically it's, one of the craziest party nights in the summer where everyone goes to the beach. There's usually bonfires and fireworks and people have to get in the water and jump three waves at midnight. But unfortunately, the beach is closed this year, so they're not letting anyone over there. But I can kind of hear them setting off fireworks already throughout the streets. But it's usually the sign that summer is here. So I'm enjoying this Pina Colada Sour. It's we put pineapple puree into a kettle sour base, pineapple puree, pineapple juice. And then for the coconut, we actually take out our paella pan and we toast the coconut on the paella pan to then add that to the beer to get the coconut flavor into it. We've been doing it the past 2 years. And for me, it's usually the indicator that it's warmer weather and it's time to go to the beach.
What, how would you sum up like the feeling in Barcelona? I mean, many of us know the history and, you know, there's architecture and so many things going on there. What was the feeling there during the quarantine and, you know, the spirit? What's the spirit of Barcelona?
Yeah, so, I mean, everyone really took it serious once everything went on to lockdown. It happened around the same time, as I think Casey was saying, or Baki, about pretty much that week before St. Patrick's Day, that weekend. Everything just went shut down, and everyone really took it serious. I mean, the streets were a ghost town. You didn't see anybody out there. Nobody was even trying to mess around. But then there was this feeling of camaraderie at 8 p.m. at night. Everyone would start applauding the healthcare workers and the police and everyone. And everyone really stuck together to try to get through it. And then in the beer community, like I was kind of saying before, we all had to figure out a way to stay around. And, you know, pretty much every brewery who didn't have it had an online store launch. And the response was great. I spoke to a lot of the other brewery owners and we all found that people were just really, really interested. People were, you know, buying a case of beer from us 1 week, a case from another brewery the next week, and just supporting all of us breweries. So it was really great to see. And that now it's starting to open up. It's been kind of weird, the process here, because it's been broken down by province. So some provinces, the smaller ones, have been able to, you know, get back to normal a little bit earlier than other ones. So we're kind of all just waiting and seeing. And then last week was kind of funny because we finally made it into phase 3 of, you know, the escalation, bringing down the quarantine. And it was supposed to last for about a week or two, but they gave the permission to the local government to decide how long that phase lasts. And here in Barcelona, they did it for 10 hours and just declared we were done. So they want tourists to start coming back and they want people to get out there. So there's movement happening now, but hopefully people, you know, keep wearing their masks and are responsible so we don't have another outbreak.
So you're let's just get another beer from you by season. So it's summer, you have a sour. What would be a typical Edge beer that I would drink in the fall if I come on this tour?
In the fall, we would probably, I mean, we'd still probably have some sours out there, but because it's always pretty warm here still in October. But we would probably at that point, I mean, IPAs are really, really big. So we would either probably have just a hop forward hazy IPA. I know that's kind of difficult for everywhere now. But then we always try to have, you know, new releases. We pride ourselves in just kind of doing a full gamut of beers. We're not known for one particular style. So anywhere from having a porter on tap to an ESB to an IPA, we kind of have a little bit of everything. So if you came in the fall, we would probably, I mean, if it's for the festival in MASH, we would probably have some special things on. But if it's just a typical day, we'd probably give you a pint of Padrino, which is our porter.
And so you're predicting for the fall that the brewery is open, restaurants will be open, but most likely the festivals will not be happening in Barcelona?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's still kind of hesitant to say anything that far out just because of, you know, what a lot of people are worried about for this second wave hitting around then. So everyone's kind of still skeptical. But if everything goes on track, you know, bars and restaurants should still be open. They might have smaller capacity, but we're hoping everything goes on. In the case of the festivals, I know the Barcelona Beer Festival, which was supposed to be held in March, they're eyeing an October date. So that might take place given the situation as we get closer. Some other smaller local festivals are still looking to see if they can do it. When it came to our festival with MASH, we worked really, really hard for the last 3 years to establish the festival and give it the reputation it's earned. And we were actually sitting together, myself with the guys from Garage, talking about it. And we just realized that we can't be assured that it would be the festival that, you know, we've kind of built it to be. And we just kind of had to make this decision to say, you know what, let's wait for next year and do it even better. And in the meantime, once we get to August, if we could see that we can organize on a smaller scale some type of event to treat the locals and to treat anybody who comes on the tour, we certainly will organize some type of event.
Do you have a date for 2021 for the MASH Festival so I can start planning?
Yeah, we always shoot for that last weekend of October. We try to squeeze it in there between All In and What's Brewing. So it's pretty much established now. It's usually the last weekend of October.
That's great, man. I'm so glad you got to come on the show, Elliot and Baki and Casey. And Joe, I don't, you know, we know about the Shelton Tours. If he wants to just wrap it up, anything else he wants to say about the tours?
Sure. First of all, it's very unfortunate for us because I personally look forward to traveling over in Europe more than anything else that I do all year. And I'm just trying to get past that and realize there's nothing I can do about that. Still hoping to go to see Elliot and all the other folks in Spain in October. But if that doesn't happen, I understand as well. But I encourage everyone listening to get in touch with me if they're interested in visiting any three of these great places. We may add more places later too, but these are our favorite places to travel right now. And really, really hoping we get things straightened out for 2021, because I got to get myself over to Europe again. That's the bottom line. It's all about me. I miss all you guys.
I miss you, Joel.
Yeah, I miss all you guys.
It's, we'll it's have like some old ground place, waiting for you,
each place
Joel.
Is a different experience and great in its own way. And it's what makes life fun for me is to visit those guys over in those places. So hopefully it all comes back.
We're going to wrap. Baki, just say goodbye in German for us.
Guten Abend, Servus, and schön, and, you know, gutes Schlafen.
Okay. And Casey, say goodbye. Schlafen. Say goodbye in Dutch.
At the brewery, just say, yo.
And Elliot, Barcelona, goodbye.
Yep. I'll give you the Spanish and the Catalan. Buenas noches. Bona nit.
Bona nit. Well, you guys have been great. Thanks so much for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. Joel Shelton of Shelton Brothers and Shelton Brothers Tours. Casey Veldman of Brouwerij de Ranke in Belgium. Jim Baki Barnes of in Franconia, Brau Manufacturer Herto in Germany. And Elliot Koenig of Edge Brewing in Barcelona, Spain. You guys have been so great. We hope to visit you guys in the future on the Shelton Brothers Tours. Thanks for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. Big shout out to our producer, Dylan Hoyer, and head engineer, Matt Patterson. I'm Jimmy Carboni. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo!
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.